You are listening to Kapiti Poets, a programme highlighting both established and up-and-coming writers of poetry on the Kapiti Coast. Welcome to this episode of Kapiti Poets, funded by the Creative Community Scheme via Kapiti Coast District Council, and also by the New Zealand Poetry Society and by generous donors via the boosted crowdfunding platform. I'm your host, Ingrid Prosser, performance poet from Paraparaumu, and I'm very happy to welcome to the studio today Dinah Hawken, who lives in Paikokoriki. I first came across Dinah's poetry a few years ago, shortly after we moved to the Kapiti Coast. I was browsing the poetry shelf in Paper Plus in Paraparaumu, and there was her latest book, Sea Light. One of the first poems I read was The Girl on the Train, which I loved and which, after a lot more reading, remains my favourite of Dinah's poems, to date anyway. I'm pleased to say that Dinah has kindly agreed to read this poem for us today, and I hope that you'll enjoy it as much as I do. I'm also thrilled to say that Dinah is the latest recipient, in 2025, of the Prime Minister's Award for Literary Achievement in Poetry. We'll talk about that later in the programme. Thank you so much for coming in to share with us, Dinah, and many congratulations on the award.
Thank you very much, Ingrid. Kia ora tato. Hello, everybody. It's a pleasure to be reading here today for listeners on the Kapiti Coast.
Wonderful. It's a great pleasure to have you here. So I'd like to ask you, first of all, how your poetic journey began. Were you writing in childhood?
No, but my father read a lot of A.A. Milne to me as a youngster.
Yes.
And I loved the poems.
Yeah.
And I think that stirred me somewhere. But I didn't, I was a late comer to writing poetry. I had a boyfriend when I was about 21 who was keen on poetry.
Yes, right.
He introduced me to things like E. Cummings.
Oh, yes,
yes. And Yevtushenko.
Right.
So poems that we wouldn't have learned at school or known about at school. So that was quite exciting to me.
Yeah.
I maybe dabbled a little bit then, but I didn't really start writing with real purpose until I was about 35.
Right. Do you know, it's amazing the number of people that I've spoken to who have either started writing poetry in their 30s or come back to it. Like, in fact, I did, because I wrote as a child and a teenager and then abandoned it and came back to it in my 30s. So that's really interesting that I'm picking that up. What is it about coming to that age and finding poetry, I wonder?
Yes. I had quite a, I don't know whether I'd call it a mystical experience, but I was reading a lot of poetry, thinking I was searching for something, but I didn't know what I was searching for.
Right.
And then in visiting one of the active thermal areas at Rotorua, I somehow, that connection with that landscape and the eruption of the the earth was happening there.
Right.
Sort of brought the poetry out in me. I just that night woke up in the middle of the night and started writing. So
wow.
It was quite an exciting beginning.
Yes, yes. And you basically didn't stop after that point.
Well, a couple of years after that, I applied to do the creative writing course, Bill Manhire, at the university. And that was the real turning point.
Right.
Because your classmates or your workshop mates take your work quite seriously. You begin to do the same yourself.
Yes, I like that. So, right, I better pay attention to the structure of this then now even more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, great.
So, and I have been pretty steady since then.
Yeah.
And my first book was published 1987, so just a few years after.
Just a few years after, yeah.
Because then I went to the States
Yes.
My husband is in was in foreign affairs.
Ah, right.
And I just immersed myself in poetry in New York.
Yes.
Listening and reading and studying and, yeah. Mm. So that made a big difference.
It's always very interesting going somewhere quite different, isn't it? Because it makes you think about things in a different way and see things from other people's perspective and...
Absolutely.
Yeah, you can learn a great deal doing that.
Yes, and having experienced the value of a workshop, not everybody feels they're a good thing, but I've gained a tremendous amount out of being with groups of other writers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. That does, yes, it suits some people more than other people, doesn't it? Yeah. Well, great. So, shall we have one of your poems now?
Yes. One of the things I thought in writing this poem is one of the things that a poet does is try and catch their thoughts and how one follows another. Mm. And that's literally what happened. But the other thing I was going to say, which is a little common to my poetry, is the use of dreams. And
right.
The last few lines, the "you," came from a dream I had about a close friend who had actually died, but she appeared to me in this poem. So, yeah, dreams are often very fascinating.
Yes, that's very true. That's very true.
Train of thought. I thought of vitality. I thought, of course, of a spring. I thought of the give inherent in the abiding nature of things. I thought of the curve of a hammock between amenable trees. I thought of the lake beyond it, calm and inwardly fluent. And then I was thinking of you. You appeared out of the water, like a saint appearing from nowhere, as bright as a shining cuckoo. Then dripping, you stood in the doorway, as delighted by friendship as water, and beaming, welcomed us in.
Lovely. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, your first book of poetry was published, as you said, in 1987. And your 12th collection, that's right, isn't it, 12th?
I think so.
Peace and Quiet has just been published this year. And your that first book in 1987 was It Has No Sound and Is Blue, lovely title, won the Commonwealth Poetry Prize for Best First-Time Published Poet. In 2007, you received the Loris Edmund Award for Distinguished Contribution to Poetry, and you've been a finalist in the New Zealand Book Awards 4 times, I think, from what I could gather from online sites. Not always up to date, I think. And now the Prime Minister's Award for Literary Achievement in Poetry. It's all a wonderful recognition and appreciation of your work over all these years.
Yes, I'm quite thrilled because of that. You know, I think to get an award at the end of a writing life feels very apt. Because all this work has gone on over many, many years. So I was quite thrilled when I got the phone call.
Yes, I can imagine. Yes. Must have been wonderful. Yeah. Well, I'd like to go back a few years to your book, The Leaf Ride, published in 2011, which contains a group of 7 poems plus prologue, which you were commissioned to write in 2008 by Chamber Music New Zealand to accompany performances by the New Zealand String Quartet of Haydn's The 7 Last Words of Our Saviour on the Cross. That must have been very interesting to do.
Yes, it was. It was a highlight, really, for me. And if I look back at my writing career, to doing collaborative things is always rewarding, but the String Quartet were wonderful to be associated with.
Yeah.
And we actually did a tour of New Zealand.
Yes.
Doing this, and I'm a very shy person.
Yes.
So the idea of being on a stage reading my poems was daunting, but also exciting. So I wrote a number of very short poems.
Yeah.
Because the tradition with Haydn's Seven Last Words is to have written work between the seven last sections.
That's right. So there are seven sonatas of about 10 minutes each with an introduction and a little epilogue at the end. And I gather it's often performed with the introduction connected with the first sonata and then the epilogue connected with the seventh one. So you get the seven pieces of music. And it was originally commissioned from Haydn for orchestra.
Yes.
And he, I listened to a wonderful Spanish performance of it yesterday with some of those words, Christ's words, in between.
Ah.
Yeah, but I've also discovered that various string quartets at times either commission new words or use existing poems instead of Christ's words.
Yes.
So that's what the Chamber Music New Zealand and the New Zealand String Quartet were doing in this case. And
yes.
They asked you to write those poems. And I was very interested to know whether you had toured with them. So that's really good to know.
You know, it's exciting. I have a Catholic background, even though I'm not a churchgoer at all these days. But it was helpful to have the Catholic background.
Yes, I can understand that. Can you tell us something more about that creative process and how you envisage the meaning of the poems? Because I can see reading them in your book, The Leaf Ride, that some of them more directly reference Christ and others don't, and you've got New Zealand connections, and I'm interested in the process of how that all came about.
A little hard for me to remember, but I listen to the music a lot.
Yeah.
And particularly the mood of the music, and tried to take that into some words for the poem.
Yeah.
But I didn't want it to be religious. I wanted it to be more general than that. And pretty much always where I am, the place feeds into my poems.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I remember there's a pahutukawa tree somewhere.
Yeah, yes, yes, indeed.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. So I can see from many of your poems that there's a feeling in them that is obviously created by the words, but I've more and more got the impression of not looking so much for a journey of the sense, and that you can say, well, this means that and that means this, and then we arrive at that feeling, because it's almost like I'm beginning to think of you like a painter who is one of those painters throwing paint on the canvas. Somehow you're throwing paint on the canvas and creating a feeling.
Well, that's interesting.
that's the feeling I've been getting in reading some of your books. I've been reading the Small Devotions.
Small Stories of Devotion.
Stories of Devotion.
Yeah.
And some of the other ones just recently. Yeah, and that's, I only just realised in this moment that's been part of my experience, that I haven't necessarily understood in terms of the words directly, but it does create a feeling.
Yeah, so I'm pleased that it does, because poetry can be very intellectual.
Yes.
And it doesn't create a feeling.
No, true.
Yes, it's an emotional experience for me often to write a poem.
Mm.
And it's good to know the feeling appears.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to hear, I think, some short poems from your new book, Peace and Quiet.
Right.
And you'll tell us a little bit about that.
This sequence of poems, speaking of peace, is full of quotes from various people, many of whom will be familiar to people, like Gandhi and... But the thing that I wanted to say about it was that in putting together a sort of collage of quotes, it was helpful but also challenging to have a form which I was working towards, which is five couplets in each one. So I hope it feels well connected, but it's been quite a patchwork business putting it together. And I'm just going to read four of these. Speaking of peace, listen to the children of Parihaka as the soldiers surround their village. Elsewhere people take sides too high to scale. Elsewhere settlers are settling. Listen to the children singing, backed by the faith and restraint of their people. Sit close and be stout-hearted, Tuwhiti said. So they held peace in the pause between fight and flight, and not even a boy threw a stone. Who will remember the triumphs of non-violence? Non-violence, the dangerous idea, whose true expression is compassion. Who are remembered and who are forgotten? Where are the women? Where exactly are we? I see where we are today, she said, because of large acts of resistance and small acts of resistance. Hope is a discipline, another woman replied. Our job is to cultivate hope. Where there is no room for reflection, Simon said, there is none either for justice and prudence. Reflection is a deterrent. But the hand that hefted the axe fondles the machine gun as lovingly. It is a habit man will have to break to survive, but the roots go very deep. They say that Tuwhiti was buried in a cloud of white feathers. Unless we can think peace into existence, Virginia wrote in 1940, millions of bodies yet to be born will lie in the same darkness and hear the same death rattle overhead. In 1881, behind the children of Parihaka, 1,500 people sat in silence. They held the silence together as the soldiers rode into the village. Courage and calm equal resistance.
You were born in Hawera and lived in Wellington for some years, and you lived in New York for, was it 7 years, I think?
Two stints, 1 3-year, 1 4-year.
Right. Yeah. Ah, that must have been fun going back again when you knew what to expect.
Yes.
Great. And when did you come to live on the Kapiti Coast?
Probably about 25 years ago, 2006, right. I think.
Yeah. And have you been in Paikakariki all that time?
Yeah.
Yeah? Well, it's a beautiful place, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's a lovely community, but also just wonderful to be by the beach.
Yes, oh, absolutely. I love to go walking there. And I think it's wonderful to have such a supportive community, a community that's definitely supportive of artists.
Yes. Yeah.
I've said something about that every time I have someone on from Paikakariki, so I won't say too much more at this point. And can you tell us something about how living in Paikakariki influences your writing?
Well, there are so many poems that have come from thinking about the sea. And I pretty much go down to the sea every day, even if it's just to look.
Yes.
And sometimes words come to mind in doing that. But in Sea Light, this my poem book before last, I've had lot of little poems called The Sea coming in and out.
Ah, yeah,
and
nice.
It's happened quite naturally too with Peace and Quiet in a different kind of way. So certainly places and landscape are major stimulation
for
me.
Yes, I understand that, yeah. And when you're in a surrounding day after day after day, it speaks to you in deep ways, doesn't it?
It becomes deeper.
Yeah, becomes deeper. Yeah, lovely. And I have to comment that I think it's absolutely wonderful that both you and Apirana Taylor, who's the previous recipient of the Prime Minister's Award for Literary Achievement, live in Paikakariki. So there's definitely something in the air.
Yes, wonderful.
And I asked you earlier when we were talking whether you were a member of the New Zealand Poetry Society, who have they've kindly given us some sponsorship for this program. And you said that you used to be a long time ago. And you told me something interesting, so I thought you might tell everyone about that.
Ah, yes. I mean, the highlight of looking back at my career, one of them was The Seven Last Words. But I was also the first poet in a program the Poetry Society ran called Poets in the Workplace. And my workplace was the Botanic Gardens in Wellington.
Yeah, wonderful.
And so I just spent a lot of time. I lived quite close.
Yeah.
So I could walk there and got to know the gardens pretty well and wrote quite a number of poems while there and put out a little, I think we had two little publications.
Right.
One with my poems and one with Tim O'Leary, who works and lives in Paikakariki.
Oh, right. Yes.
Who is a photographer at, and worker at Otari. So Otari, Wilton's Bush, were part of the process.
Right.
So it was just a lovely thing to do.
Let's hear the poem now that I've been wanting to hear, The Girl on the Train, which is, I can say this, can't I, that it's about a train journey from, or to the city, to Wellington City, presumably from Paikakariki. I imagine that's where you got on the train.
Absolutely.
Yes, wonderful. So we'll have that poem now.
The Girl on the Train. I was facing her. I could see the whole performance. The older couple in front had tittered, and I looked up to see her with the brush in her hand. It was off-peak, we three the only ones facing her way. She slipped the brush into the foundation and began, via a small mirror, to attend to her face with light, confident strokes. My first thought was, God, 20-year-olds, where has feminism gone? But as I watched the way she worked, on her brow, cheekbones, cheeks, chin and neck, with the swift intuition of an artist in a studio, all the way from Paikakariki to Pukerua Bay, my mind changed. I was halfway through, no great mischief, but it stayed in my bag. I knew the pleasure of absorption. I knew intent when I saw it. But why was her work taking so long? Perhaps she is obsessive, I thought, compulsive. And this ritual keeps her going, keeps her steady, keeps her feeling sane. From Pukerua Bay to Porirua, she worked on her eyes, a muted palette with a smaller brush that she moved with swift, definite gestures from one set of lashes to the other, her wrist turning from back to front again and again. Perhaps, I thought, she's just attention-seeking, making public, as we do on Facebook, what would have been once private. But she seemed unaware of us. Audience was not on her mind. I know, I thought, she's a drama student, late, out of bed and preparing for a show. After Porirua, she began on her mouth. Her strokes were small, vertical, and the colour, like her nails, bright pink. Ah, I thought, that's it. She's a trainee makeup artist practising on her own face. Perhaps she has an exam. It was just after Tawa, the deodorant appeared. She pulled out her round neck top, first on one side, then the other, and concentrated on each armpit for an unusual length of time. Then I think I clicked. This was trained theatre, mime. She was playing a role. We were the audience after all. She was making up the girl on the train to present her to us, letting us face up to her as she made up her face. The deodorant was the mischief, the high point, and the work on the fingernails all the way to Wellington with her head down and on one side was the denouement, timed beautifully to the end.
It's been lovely to talk with you, Dinah. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Well, thank you very much.
In a moment, we'll finish the programme with a couple of short poems. Firstly, I'd like once more to say thank you very, very much to our generous and supportive funders, the Kapiti Coast District Council for the Creative Communities Scheme funding, which comes from Creative New Zealand, the New Zealand Poetry Society, and individuals via the boosted crowdfunding platform.
Trembling. A spring morning, and you can see the wind has no bravado. Over the island, a winged cloud moves towards you, out of a truly sweet blue. Surrounded by gentleness, the swoop of a tui, the repressed threat of a warming world, from the sidelines a leafiness arises and it trembles. It's like standing under the outdoor shower with the sound of a piano playing upon your stiff, wingless body. Musical. Sometimes in the garden, the silence between waves goes on without a break, with no intention to break. A blackbird begins to sing, a tui joins in, the cabbage tree, dead still, offers its flowers, and now everything's included in the deal. Everything's breathing, the sea, the silence, the trees, the birds, and the human being. Expanse. It's a day of rest, quiet, entirely apart from the others, like total victory over the others. The face of the earth is sheen on calm water. Into it you can dip your feet, your body, and or you can stand back from it, wondering about the word soul.
You have been listening to Kapiti Poets, a programme highlighting both established and up-and-coming writers of poetry on the Kapiti Coast.
This programme was produced at and first aired on Coast Access Radio with support from New Zealand On Air.